You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this episode, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. This is a reading of a cycle of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Understanding Healing, Meditative Reflections on Deepening Medicine Through Spiritual Science, Collected Works, Volume 316, translated by Christian von Arnim. This is Lecture 11, given in Dornach on the 23rd of April, 1924. My dear friends, I would like to begin by saying a few words about the verse which I wrote on the blackboard at the end of yesterday's session. It starts with the words, quote, "See how things come together in the cosmos. You sense how the human being is configured." Close quote. And I pointed out that the moon symbol has been placed next to it. Now, if we want to understand human beings thoroughly, particularly with regard to treating them medically, we must be quite clear that we cannot just look at what links human beings with the earth, because that, as we saw in the first session, really only concerns the first few years of childhood up to the change of teeth, and no more thereafter. Then those forces come into play which actually organize human beings, organize them away from the earth. They have their etheric body for that, and the etheric body is significantly different from the physical body. The physical body is heavy, the etheric body is not heavy. The physical body strives toward the earth, the etheric body in all directions out into the widths of the cosmos. You will certainly encompass the whole of the cosmos when you consider the human physical and the etheric body. The physical body is intimately connected with the earth. The etheric body is in intimate connection with everything that can be perceived in the environment surrounding the earth. So you can think of all the forces which act on your physical body as forces which draw the human being to the earth, and all the forces which act on the etheric body as those which draw the human being away from the earth. They are there, and they act in the human being. And so we cannot look at human beings such that we say they assimilate some substance, and first it was outside, and then it is inside. That is not how it is. Due to the fact that these centrifugal forces are active in human beings, the substance immediately becomes part of the whole universe, the whole visible universe. Then, if we look at the astral part of a human being, you have to imagine that it actually arises outside space. It only appears to work in space. And when you get to the capital I, you can no longer make any drawing at all. It works neither from above nor below. It does not work at all in a way such that one could make a drawing of it. But it works only through the progression of time, the continuity of time. What emanates from the human eye organization cannot basically be drawn, but we must be clear that it is real in every respect. But it radiates neither in nor out in the way it works, but works purely qualitatively. When you look into the etheric worlds, we can say that it is as if we were constantly losing ourselves with our etheric body in the etheric worlds. See Plate 13. The astral always radiates toward us. It is not spatial either, but it acts as if it was coming toward us from the reaches of the cosmos. Now, you see, let us assume that in nutrition we are dealing with vegetable protein. Vegetable protein is firstly heavy, and secondly, being protein, it also strives toward the cosmos. When you introduce vegetable protein into the human organism, then the other two forces immediately arrive through this vegetable protein, the forces which work in from all sides, and those which really work non-spatially on the protein as forces of the eye organization. Now assume that all the things which could act on human beings in this way would, grotesque as this may sound, only be able to turn them into round, spherical bodies. You find the shape which arises through the interaction of these forces, the forces radiating out from the earth and those radiating in a bird's egg. That is the form which these forces take. But how does it happen that it is not just the shape of the egg which emerges from a bird's egg, but a shape with a specific configuration? Well, you see, if there was only what I have drawn here, and he draws, then the egg would develop no further than an egg shape, see plate 13. The bird would be completed once the egg is there. But it is the case that a bird has a very specific configuration, and what I am about to say about birds also applies to humans. This arises in the first place because the moon orbits the earth. The moon is in orbit. But if we only had the moon orbiting, there still would be no bird. What would happen is that the eggshell would soften and drop off, and a spherical entity would develop, a spherical entity consisting essentially of protein. It is not, however, the case that the only thing which the moon does is to orbit the earth. There are many different constellations in space, and the moon travels past these constellations, modifying the forces coming from them. Think, therefore, that the moon travels past the Pleiades here. The egg is subject to the forces which stream in from the Pleiades, but which are modified by the moon partially covering, that is, modifying them. So a force streams in from the Pleiades, which is modified by the moon positioned before them and exercising its influence. As a result, the head of the bird develops on the one hand. If I draw it diagrammatically from the egg. So we can say that the head of the bird is formed from out of the cosmos in the interaction between the moon, a satellite, and the fixed stars, which exercise a particular influence because of their arrangement in the Pleiades. Now the moon moves on, and let us say, stands in opposition to its earlier configuration, facing Libra. The forces of Libra are modified in turn because of the moon position there. We have a different constellation of forces and the moon, which was a full moon here in front of the Pleiades, has in the meantime changed into a new moon. The moon, in connection with the constellation of Libra, has a different effect from when it acts from the Pleiades, and the effect on the egg is to create the tail. The other things lie in between, so that if you wish to study the shape of the bird, you have to study how the moon passes in front of what is spread out cosmically in space. What can anyone say about the development of human beings, or any living thing, if they stop at earthly circumstances? They can only say, certainly the eagle has a certain shape, the vulture has a certain shape, the kangaroo has a certain shape, and so on. Why do they have that shape? If you remain stuck in the terrestrial, like science does, there is only one answer. The animal has inherited its shape from its parents. That is rather like saying there is poverty because people are poor. But it fails to explain anything. You have to keep going further up the chain. The parents have it from their parents, and finally you end up where you started. If we want to understand the configuration, we have to go to the cosmic forces, the constellations. But even that is not the end of it. If only those things existed which I have mentioned, there would certainly be wonderfully formed beings, but they would really all be jellyfish, as humans indeed were in past periods of the earth. In the Atlantean period, they were a kind of jellyfish. That was so because they were only able to assimilate matter, substance, which was in a malleable fluid state in order to build their physical bodies. They can integrate potassium, sodium, and the other substances because the moon not only travels past Libra, Aries, Taurus, but because the other planets in our solar system travel past, and they incorporate those things in us, which, for example, ensure that we really do get our human shape. So the moon, for example, I described a bird to you, also has simultaneously incorporated, I have only drawn the moon, sun, and Saturn, those things which also come from the relative position of Mercury to the planets, and the relative position of Venus to the planets, with regard to the formation of the human head. If they did not act together with the moon, in its relative positions, we would all be born with hydrocephalus. That is how we have the organic metal characteristics incorporated in us. That the relative positions of Mercury and Venus work together with the relative positions of the moon. And we would suffer dreadfully from rickets, not just be bow-legged, but have legs that bend elastically, and our arms would be jellyfish-like, if, on the other hand, those planets did not act together in relation to the moon, which are directed more at Saturn, and if Saturn itself did not work together with Jupiter and Mars. The sun causes the rhythmical balance between these two parties. So these first two lines of the verse are intended to lead you to understand how the human being is formed out of the cosmos. And we will not make any progress until astronomy is reintroduced into our medical science, but astronomy in the sense I have explained it now. In fact, most of the things which people say tend not to have any great meaning. They juggle, don't they, between earthly circumstances and heredity by ascribing the phenomena in human beings either to one or the other. But if you look at it in detail, you get nowhere, because it has been forgotten that the way in which human beings develop must be derived from what is provided by a knowledge of the starry sky, but seen qualitatively in its inner nature. For the most important thing which, with regard to the human form, is the moon. That has to be involved everywhere, while the others modify its influence. The most important thing with regard to the human form is the moon. The second line says, see Plate 2, see what moves you in the air. You experience the human being ensouled, and there's an image of the sun. Close quote. You see, everything at work in the human etheric body forms the human being. But human beings would become living robots, even if they had our form today, if the only thing acting on them were what I have described so far. But that is not the only thing that acts on them, but the environment also acts. All that is alive and active in the element of the air which surrounds us. And the etheric and the astral from the cosmos are also active in the air. And just as we are formed and shaped externally and spatially under the influence of the moon combined with the heavens, so we include in our form inward ensoulment, because the sun works together with the heavens for this, just like the moon does for our form. So we can say that when the moon influences the cosmic forces in such a way that it is positioned in front of Leo, then it first works, now we are no longer talking about our own forces, please note, in the surrounding air, on what acts on us through our respiration and the blood circulation, and this changes constantly. The air changes as the sun moves on. This action in the surroundings internalizes the form to become ensoulment, so that we can truly say the sun constellations and the cosmos have their effect in the surroundings of the earth in the airy element, and that provides our ensoulment. So that is the second one. The third line says, see Plate 12, quote, see what is transformed on the earth. You grasp the human being filled with spirit, close quote. This transformation refers to the gradual sinking down of the physical body into the corpse. Quote, see what is transformed on the earth. You grasp the human being filled with spirit. Close quote. But Saturn has to be included. Why? Well, you see, the Saturn forces are not just up there where Saturn is positioned. Saturn is located in space a long distance from the earth, and its external action is not particularly great. It does not act a great deal externally on human beings. Its constellations, with regard to other stars, do not have a particularly strong effect on human beings either. But it has forces which are soaking very strongly into the earth. The Saturn forces soak very strongly into the earth, and when we look outward, we do not really find many Saturn forces. But when we look at the earth itself, at what there is from the surface toward the inside of the earth, we see that it is rather like what I might describe as what happens when you see a snail moving along the ground. You have the snail going past. And when you look where it has gone, you see a trail of slime, which it has left behind. You can see where it has gone. The same thing happens with Saturn. It moves along, but leaves traces behind in all the places where it has shone on the earth. These are very, very clear traces. If these traces had not remained in much earlier periods of Earth, development as forces, let me read that again, if these traces had not remained in much earlier periods of Earth development as forces which inhabit the Earth, we would have no lead anywhere in the Earth. Lead is created from the original substance, from the Saturn forces at work in the Earth itself, which have soaked in. The lead forces were created in the earth in more ancient periods, when circumstances were different. Today, the lead forces do still have an after effect in human beings, and they have quite a different effect from the other two forces. You see, we would not be people with a mind, but beings with a body and soul, if the Saturn forces did not exist. That should tell you something, my dear friends. In reality, there is nothing without a reason in the cosmos. Ask yourselves, during what period has Saturn had an opportunity to impregnate the Earth from all sides with its forces? It has done so in the course of 30 years, in which it has orbited it, the Sun, and thus the Earth. These 30 years are also the 30 years which human beings spend from birth until the time when a certain development in their lives has been concluded. When human beings have lived for 30 years on Earth, then, where they stand on Earth, they are precisely at the point, which might not, of course, necessarily coincide with the straight line coming from Saturn in the heavens, where Saturn has impregnated the Earth. It impregnates the spot for the second time when human beings have reached the age of 30. And so the influence of Saturn on the Earth is wholly connected with human beings. And that is ultimately why we have a body which has catabolism, as we keep saying. We do not just have anabolic forces in the organism, because that would make us pass out. Our vitality has to recede in a certain way. The catabolic forces must always be there. Our organism not only develops in a forward direction, but its development also recedes. And the space for spiritual development lies in this receding development. That is where it goes. Spiritual development does not come out of vitality, but as the latter recedes, spiritual development finds a space in what has been left empty, metaphorically. That comes from the forces which arise in the earth through the impregnation of the earth with the Saturn forces. That is why I had to put the Saturn symbol with the third verse. See Plate 12. However, as people, we would be ancient old men and women at the age of 30 because of these Saturn forces. We would have to start walking on crutches at 30. Indeed, Fichte was happy to accept the worth of human beings, but only until they were 30. He said that all 30-year-olds should be killed because from then on they were no longer of any use to the world and became weak cripples. What Fichte meant by that would inevitably happen if Saturn were indeed able to unfold its forces on Earth. But the Saturn forces are also modified by the Jupiter and Mars forces. As a result, we do not catabolize to the same extent up to the age of 30, but only to the degree that we can carry on for a bit beyond then. And it is indeed due to Mars and Jupiter that we are not ancient old people by the age of 30. If we want to understand how human beings can still be human beings at 45, we have to look out into cosmic space. And so the Moon, Sun, and Saturn are the celestial bodies which are nearest to us and furthest from us in the planetary system. The way it is structured today is not organic, because up to Saturn, it emerged from an earlier single whole, whereas Uranus and Neptune came in and became part of it at a later stage. Uranus and Neptune had not been discovered by the ancients, which is why they took Saturn to be the outermost planet. There continues to be good reason for going as far as Saturn. Astrologers still have an awareness of this, in that they really only use Uranus and Neptune for those human characteristics which go beyond the personal. For when human beings become inspired or strive to go further than what is personal to the individual, for when we are concerned with things which are no longer connected with personal development, that is the general approach in astrology. Only when human beings become inspired or strive beyond their human nature, let us say, or when their organization expands or catabolizes excessively, everything then which goes beyond human nature applies in this respect. They are the planets which behaved like cosmic drifters and were then captured by the planetary system which goes with our Earth. The celestial body nearest to us and the celestial body farthest from us regulate what occurs in human beings. The Moon, with regard to our form, Saturn through the Earth, with regard to our formless spiritual part, in that it breaks down our form, always dissolving it in an inward direction, and the Sun brings about the rhythm between the two. There you have what we really need to know. On the basis of ancient experience, it was possible to know that the forces which correspond to our third line, quote, see what is transformed on the earth. You grasp the human being, filled with spirit, close quote, are the same complex of forces which first came to expression in lead formation. So that we can say that what fissures us as a physical organism, so that there is room for the spiritual element, must also occur in lead. Reader's Society has used the word fissures, F-I-S-S-U-R-E-S. End of Reader's Aside, I will actually read the sentence again. So that we can say that what fissures us as a physical organism, so that there is room for the spiritual element, must also occur in lead. It is fissuring forces which have created lead. If we introduce lead into the human organism, fissures arise. If we need fissuring because we catabolize too little, we must give lead in some form or other. If, in contrast, the opposite is the case, so that human beings cannot create sufficient form, that they become what we might call spongy, then the ancient knowledge must be applied so that the force streaming in from the Moon in ancient times, when the minerals were formed, the silver substance, should act. In other words, the complex of Moon forces is at work in that instance, so that the silver forces are the forces which turn sponginess into structure. Silver substance can support the power of the Moon. The whole of the planetary system is connected with these agents which are preferentially used for medicines. Saturn equals lead, Jupiter equals tin, Mars equals iron, Sun equals gold, Venus equals copper, Mercury equals mercury, and the Moon with silver. These concordances are treated in an incredibly superficial way, based as they are on the meticulous studies that were undertaken in the ancient mysteries. It is indeed true that things were tested at that time in a much better and more concrete way, because these conclusions are based on something that has been well tested. The position of Saturn was examined very closely when the constitution of the whole organism in a person lost independence, so that the fissuring forces did not work sufficiently. The vitality, the integrating forces, became too strong, so that the person became dazed in his or her organic constitution. It does not necessarily have to be the sensorium which becomes dazed. The ancients would see that it happened when Saturn was in a particular position, so that Saturn still had a very strong effect on human beings in earlier times. If it was observed that human beings fell into such a state just when Saturn was setting, when it could not unfold its forces in full, then lead was used as a medicine. The information about these things, which can still be found in amateurish books today, is indeed true for the reason that people cannot spoil it, because they do not know where it comes from. Otherwise people would speculate about it, and then we would quite certainly have bad information. It remains correct, because people have lost the science from which it originates. It remains through tradition. People cannot spoil this truth through thinking. Even those effects which act on human beings from the earth are in truth the action of Saturn, which has simply been retained, drawn in by the earth. Just consider the magnificent consequences all of this has with regard to human understanding. It is quite impossible to link the moral element with the human being as he or she is seen by science today. The moral element remains adrift somewhere up there in the abstract. That is also why it is particularly in Protestantism, which has lost the connection with the spiritual, with the cosmos, that everything of a moral nature is simply separated off from a cosmic context. All that remains is pure belief. But when you look at reality, human beings are definitely creatures sustained and maintained from out of the cosmos, and the moral forces flow in together with their astral nature. Then you have the possibility of thinking of the human being as truly inwardly connected with the moral world. Thus you return once again, if you practice true medicine, to what makes human beings moral entities at all, to the human being who can experience the moral element truly organically and no longer needs to keep it in mind as external commandments. That is what I wanted to tell you and what I think you can take away with you, because it will be able to guide you in many things. You can, of course, obtain the details in all kinds of places. But the way in which these details behave in the human organism is the thing which you can only obtain from the kind of discussion we have just had. You might be able to read in a medical vademecum that lead has this or that effect. You will understand why it does that if you have really taken in what we have examined here. It is a feature of all these discussions that because they are fetched from out of the spiritual world, they demand much less of the memory than what human beings take in physically. What they learn, well, it's like this. They have a certain amount of control over it. But what they obtain in other ways, and what implants itself in their memory by itself, that is what you take in by this means. You will notice something particular about it. If you do not keep experiencing it through meditation, you will forget it. Spiritual truths have the particular characteristic that they cannot become real remembered truths, just as you cannot retain in your organism what you ate a week ago. Ruminants can do so, but only for a short period. In ruminants, it is an organic replication, a rudiment in the physical body for what is otherwise only present in the etheric body as memory. But what has to happen with regard to spiritual truths is that they have to be experienced again and again, so they then turn into a habit. They are not retained in the memory or pictorially, but become habitual. That is the meaning, the comprehensive meaning of meditating, that we appeal to something which basically is only present in early childhood. At that time, we do not have any pictorial memory either. That is why young children forget their first experiences. They live in the habitual memory. We have to return to that if we want to deal with spiritual truths in us, otherwise we forget them very quickly. That is why, because you wanted to receive esoteric material here, I had to call on you to make these things your own inwardly through meditation. Otherwise they will be of no use to you. If you meditate, you will develop the delicate receptivity, which will enable you, not instinctively now, but through intuition, to feel something similar to what has been preserved in an abstract way in the so-called doctrine of signatures. That is, you will be able to see in the plant or the stone how they can work in the organism. Furthermore, you will not only train your physical body, but also your etheric body. And your habitual memory will give you a refined perceptual ability with regard to the content of your physical environment, and the ability, therefore, to look at the world as a person who receives the question from the human organism, the diseased lung, the diseased heart, and the answer from the medicinal plant, the medicinal mineral, and so on, in the surroundings. Question. Dr. Steiner, many of us are intent on obtaining and orienting clearest possible overall understanding of the whole situation in which we basically find ourselves. One can feel deep inside oneself that the anthroposophical truths are something quite radical, and that an infinite amount depends on their realization. In the newsletter we were sent after the Christmas conference, it struck me how much the meditation given there seems to point towards something generally educational. How can that be realized, which we feel called upon so deeply within ourselves, and how do we obtain a guiding understanding of our own destiny and our tasks in the future? One feels that one can only act in the right way if one learns to understand one's own karma in the greater context, and at the same time musters the courage not to want to escape it, but to realize it in the right way. End of question. Steiner again. Now, I believe I can hear in your question what you want to say, but if I have misunderstood, you will have to rephrase it. The question you have asked touches on something which should be known about today, because, particularly in recent times, there has been much discussion in anthroposophical groups of young people, among young people more so than among the old ones, about the end of the Kali Yuga. That is so because it is indeed the case that with the end of the 19th century, a new age of humanity has started. To begin with, people continue as they did before. If you have a ball and push it with your hand, it will roll, and if you take your hand away, it will continue rolling. In the same way, what people experienced up to the end of the 19th century continues rolling for the time being, even if the forces are no longer behind it. And it can even take on much worse forms than in the period which has finished. But alongside that, alongside the old period, a light-filled period is arising in the world in a concealed way. A period of lightness is shining into the world, and it is indeed the case that the first rays of the period of lightness must be caught by anthroposophy. Now, you see, I am talking about certain contexts in much more radical terms now than was the case at the Christmas conference. You will see the same from the lectures which I otherwise give. Those who can still be here this evening will see that certain human situations are indeed touched upon in the lectures. But with such observations, it is not yet possible for me to talk in detail, in quite concrete terms, about those things which would feed a craving for sensationalism. You see, strict laws have to be observed in these things, and I do know that a certain desire need not necessarily be driven only by a craving for sensationalism, that it can exist and that it can be satisfied if each individual person could be told about their previous lives on earth. Things cannot be taken that far. But certain perspectives can be set out, however, which can become important. Now, you see, it is indeed the case that in ordinary human life today, if I may put it like that, we have two types of people. There are these two types of people because at certain periods the spiritual development of humanity on earth was different from other periods, and there was a kind of wave movement. But the waves would not only follow one another, but also run side by side. At certain times, for example, the Western development of Christianity had become superficial, externalized. People had no possibility of getting to the content from what was offered to them by Christianity. This provoked a reaction among the Cathars. So there were people who lived very much in external things, and people who wanted strongly to develop inwardly. Something similar was the case when, under the influence of Comenius, and earlier still, the communities of the Moravian Brethren were founded deep into Hungary and Poland, so that people who were striving deeply in their soul for spirituality were always living together in the world with those who were forced into externality through the karma of their culture. That one person belongs to one group and another to the other is connected with previous karmic circumstances. Now, a very significant factor for humanity today is the extent to which a person belonged to the one or other of the groups just described in their earlier incarnation. Let us assume that a person is born today who lived within a Christian tradition which was completely externalized. That person will possess quite a different human configuration from a person who, if you like, belonged to the Bohemian or Moravian Brethren. And what is that difference? You see, you only discover the pertinent facts about the end of the Kali Yuga if you look at the concrete circumstances. Otherwise, it remains an historical construct. The Dark Age ran until 1899. Then the Age of Light began. Knowing this is not very productive. We have to deal with concrete spiritual things. The people who are born about the turn of the end of the Kali Yuga are such that they have a strong spiritual striving within them. That should not make you presumptuous, but you must include that in your living knowledge. These people are, to a large extent, people who have their origin in the heretics, in those who wanted to follow an inward path. At about the turn of the 19th to the 20th century, people were called down who did not live in the general stream of externalizing Christianity, but in such inward-looking sects. What is the consequence of that? You see, when we pass through the time between death and a new birth, we study and obtain a very precise knowledge of the human cosmos in a spiritual way. Just like here on earth, we can study and get to know the world and cosmos outside the human being. The human cosmos is just as big and detailed because human beings contain just as much as the cosmos. We study that with our transformed will forces. We get to know the human being very precisely. Now, there is a difference between the two groups of human beings, which I have just spoken about. Those who adopted a more outward path were not able to enter the spiritual world properly between death and a new birth. They passed by the particular nature of human beings in the spiritual world without a thought and were reborn. And it was particularly the people born in the second third of the 19th century who were of the type who adopted such an external attitude in their previous life. They did not bring any understanding of the human being with them into their life on earth. They behaved toward the human being such that they used the body for eating, drinking, walking, standing, and sitting, but they were not interested in such an understanding because they had not absorbed such an interest between death and a new birth. Those were the people who were primarily satisfied with materialism because they did not feel the need to acquaint themselves with the human being. The materialist, who only ever wants to know about matter, knows the least about it. We can say with a clear conscience that all the people sitting here are reborn souls of heretics, except that you should not consider this as a sign of special merit, who experienced a strong urge, between death and a new birth, to crawl into every part of the human being, and thus have unconsciously turned the human being into an enormous riddle for themselves. It comes to expression in the desire to learn more than is offered by materialistic medicine. and there you have the inner justification for the karma of which you have spoken. You must not take these things lightly, because if you took them lightly, you would misjudge yourself. You would not get close to what you actually want to get close to as a result of certain experiences you had between death and a new birth. And the result is of not finding in your earthly life what we have striven for over centuries is not just that people become superficial. Let me read that again. And the result of not finding in your earthly life what we have striven for over centuries is not just that people become superficial. We have left the age behind when people who have learned truths about the human being between death and a new birth can become superficial without any consequences. Young people are not currently in a position in which they could become superficial without consequences, because they would ruin themselves inwardly right down as far as the organs. The worst thing is not that people today are materialistic in their thoughts, that they chatter about monism and so on. That is not the worst thing. We could easily get over that. What people talk about is not of such great import, but what then goes back into the feeling and will nature of the human being is active in the organs, and people will not be able to sleep properly at all unless they deepen themselves spiritually. That is the key thing. If you leave people today without such deepening, what will be the consequence? The consequence will be that we need hardly look as far ahead as 1940 or 1950 before there will be widespread epidemics of sleeplessness. Such people will no longer be able to support human civilization at all. So your karma does not give you the choice to ignore it, as people could still do before the end of the Kali Yuga and until now. You do have to consider, in all seriousness, what I have told you now about the configuration of your karma. Of course, it has to remain a general characterization, but you can nevertheless find the general karma useful with regard to yourself if you put yourself in the position of frequently reflecting on the special circumstances of your life. You would, to a greater or lesser extent, be able to put yourself in a position of finding something of note if you reflected on the particular circumstances of your life. The youth movement is too theoretical, and as a result we hear too much of the same theories. If you were to go no further than really observing in yourselves the special things which young people experience today, which are truly different from what the previous generation experienced, the youth movement would at once take on a completely different shape. That is what we are striving for with our youth movement, that it takes concrete shape and does not remain stuck in abstractions. Question from Dr. Bort. In the discussion we had yesterday, we not only asked ourselves the question, how come that we were guided to come to Dornach at Christmas in particular, but we told ourselves that we do not know with our conscious human being why we have come here at all, and that the opportunity was presented to us to take in such great things which we cannot comprehend and have not deserved with what we are. On the basis of that fact in particular, it came alive in many of us that a very specific task lies ahead of us, and that for us it is a matter of being prepared to tackle this karma and this task just in the way it was presented to us in the topic which was indicated to us in the newsletter. And to question Steiner, well, if you let the, as I believe, serious discussion we have had work on your soul, you will be able to take something away with you from this all-too-short gathering. The end of Lecture 11.